Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Depression is underrated. I got to tell you, welcome to the program. I'm in one of my moods, and it's a good one at that. It's a reverse mood. It's an obverse mood. It's just what it is. We've been taught to believe that all negative emotions are bad, but sometimes negative emotions can be very constructive, especially if you know how to channel the negative emotion. And I'll tell you about that another time. Everyone understands this who's learned to overcome, let us say, certain fallibilities within themselves. Within themselves? That's an interesting one. Within themselves or within themselves? I've often thought about that. Well, we won't go into the multiple personality disorder issue today. We'll deal with that one another day. Today we're going to deal with depression and suicide because that's a really great topic for Friday. Of course, Trump has warned Israel not to build any more settlements, which is a real shocker for the Israel lobby and, of course, for the people who thought that Trump was going to be gung-ho Israel. But this is a reflection of Tillerson. Tillerson's appointed the next day. Israel's warned to stop the settlements because Tillerson's tied to the Saudis. He's an oil man. So, you know, the left should actually love Tillerson. Since they hate Israel, they should embrace Tillerson. But they don't get that yet. They can only think left and right. They can't think, you know, globally. I was going to do some odd things today, such as, first of all, it's open mic to Mike Friday, period, end of story. 855-407-282. It is Friday. It's like your show. You get to do that stuff. But everyone is talking about the article that was linked up on the top of Drudge since last night because it was taken directly from my show yesterday. And I kind of walked into it. I walked into the minefield. Luckily, I came out somewhat unscathed. I mean, the mines went off around me, but none of them were fatal. And that was showing that I'm not a sycophant to the Trump team. And I call them like I see them. And I've had enough of the grandstander, to be honest with you. I've had enough of it. I think that she's going to destroy him if he doesn't rein her in. Why is she on every show 24/7? Why did she go on Chris Matthews and make an idiot out of herself with the Bowling Green Massacre story? Right after I said this, yeah, the next day, Bowling Green Massacre, which didn't occur. Bowling Green terrorism. Okay, so she made a mistake. The point is that there's no necessity for Trump to be out in the media every day, 24/7. There is absolutely no need for it. Moreover, I'll tell you something else. There is no need to smash China in the face, as he did with Taiwan. There is no need to smash Mexico in the face, as he did with Mexico. Of course, some of us like these policies. But it's one thing to be brazen about your policy positions and get your policy positions functioning. Where are the significant old guard men in advising Trump? Why is he using a barfly out front? This is the issue. Why can't he use someone with class to represent the Trump administration was my main point. The point is that there's a difference between being in your face when you're running for office and being in the face of the world when you're running the country. It sounds good. It makes us happy. It gives us the red meat that we all want, so we think. But remember that little old phrase called unintended consequences. Remember what I said to you last week? I'll say it again about Mexico. I said, why does he have to be so confrontational about Mexico? Of course we want the wall built. There's a quiet way. There's a diplomatic way. There's an intelligent way. There's a presidential way to do it and get it done without smashing the Mexicans in the face. First of all, you're dealing with a very macho country. That's number one. That's one. And I said to you on this show that you're liable to have an unintended consequence if you keep this up with Mexico, which is you'll have China moving in. What would you do if you woke up next week and see China moved an aircraft carrier off the coast of Mexico since it's not our territory? What are you going to do then? What could you do then? Every day, some belligerent fool inside the Trump administration draws a line in the sand. Some pugilistic adventurer within the Trump administration draws a line in the sand, whether it's with Mexico, whether it's with China, now it's with Iran. You know, there's a limit to acting macho. And by the way, underneath a macho act, there's usually some great fears and great insecurity. We all know that from boyhood. And if we haven't learned that after boyhood, then we shouldn't be inside advising a president. Pugilism is wonderful in a ring, and it looks good on television in a script. It doesn't act very well on the world stage. It often results in disaster. And we don't need a disaster in the world right now. Sure, we want a war with Mexico. Sure, we want Iran constrained. Sure, we want fair trade policies with China. But smashing them in the face and challenging them like a bully with a chip on his shoulder is not necessarily going to get the job done. And I want to know where the serious men are. I want to know where they are. Where are the George Shultzes? Where are the James Bakers? Where are the people like Henry Kissinger, whether you like his policies or not? Where are they? They know how to do diplomacy. They know how to talk with these people in these other countries to get things done quietly and efficiently and get them done. But to have a barfly out there screaming every day like it's all about her, or the pugilist on the other side. You know, there's an inside story here that I didn't know if I was going to deal with. I actually was going to do suicide today. No, I don't mean commit suicide on the air, even though there's many people who would love that one. I think the audience would be phenomenal, because I was reading why live stream suicides are becoming a disturbing new norm. No, I'm not threatening that at all. I've gone through that phase a long time ago. I came out of it after writing volumes and volumes of poetry, which I locked up in a box called Suicidal Ideations, and I put a ribbon around and I threw it in the bay. That's what it's for. I don't need to give you the refuse of my mind. I was going to talk about suicide because there's an epidemic of suicide amongst the young in America today. There was an article in the New York Post about these incredible kids in New York. They come from the small towns of America. They're like straight-A students, great athletes. Everything in their life was done right. Track star, football star, National Honor Society, valedictorian of his high school in tiny Brookfield, Missouri. Goes to Columbia and wanted to be a heart surgeon. 2 months after moving into a single-bed dorm room, this young boy, Wallace, quit school, returned home to Missouri, and hanged himself in his basement. Wallace became the second of the school's stunning five students to commit suicide since the semester began in September. So there are terrible, tragic suicides going on in these Ivy League colleges. And they're saying it's a result of stress and isolation. And I thought it would be a good topic, to be frank with you, because I would like to talk about a topic that's verboten. We never talk about it. But if you scratch the surface of many people, occasionally they get those little thoughts running through their head, and then they reject them, as they should. You know, don't lie to me. Don't lie to yourself. You've thought about, you know, ending your life, probably. Some of you have. But you don't do it. People don't do it generally, but they think about it. Because it's an option that nature gives us. But it's not an option that we should elect. There's a simple answer for religious people who believe in God. I'll make it real simple for you. You want me to make it real simple? I'll make it very simple for God-believing people. You don't own your body. End of story. And death comes soon enough anyway, so leave it to God and forget about it. Just live with the pain, whatever it may be. I know it sounds trite, but it works, by the way. But you have to believe in God. The problem is, if you believe in nothing, you have nothing to fall back upon. And if you think you are God, there's no reason to think you shouldn't end it if you're in a little pain. But I wanted to talk more about suicide horror stories, meaning suicide has probably touched many people in this audience in one way or the other. And I mean in some tragic ways. And I thought that it's a better change of topic than talking about bar flies or bar fighters or Donald Trump. Can we get through one show without saying the word Trump? Is there any way to avoid the word T? For one whole day, any word with the word T in it. I've had 8 years of the O in it. You remember when I said after a while with Obama, I said he's not the sun, the moon, and the stars. Can we stop already with Trump being the sun, the moon, and the stars of talk radio? There must be something else to talk about. So I figured I'd talk about something that is of social importance, such as suicide horror stories. Now, there's something not related to this that I also want to talk about. I was home last night alone, dealing with isolation and stress, which I've learned to live with my whole life, and I just live with it, like everyone does. I'm not a child. I don't need friends. If you're 5 years old, you need friends with a pointy hat and things that you blow at each other at a party. That's friends when you're five. At a certain point, you realize, okay, fine, what's a friend? What do you mean, friend? What is a friend? So I tend to watch movies, and most of the movies are such garbage, I can't watch them. I can't take alien movies, car chases, sluts falling down on Sunset Boulevard, fans in the background with women being mauled against a brick wall. So, you know, it's hard to... I like to watch a lot of documentaries. But last night, I'm stumbling around 9:30 at night. It's raining outside. I'm with the dog. I stumble upon a costume drama that I had never seen before. But it was filmed in a film stock that you don't see. It was done in 1975. And the colors were so vibrant. The stage sets were so off the charts incredible. So I sat and watched it. I didn't think I'd watch it for more than 5 minutes. You ever get like one of those movies you're not going to watch? And I'm watching and I can't stop because each scene is a painting. Virtually every frame in the film was a painting. The film was called Barry Lyndon, 1975. Now, I had no idea watching it that it was directed by one of the greatest directors in the world, Stanley Kubrick. It's now considered one of the greatest films ever made. No car chases, no aliens, no bling, no rubbing of the crotch, no handguns, no inner city stories. The English is spoken perfectly, as is the German, by the way. I highly recommend it. It's 3 hours long. If you got nothing to do, you got to watch this Barry Lyndon because it has so many... First of all, it's based upon a novel written a long time ago by a great English writer whose name I will not bore you with because it's unimportant, because he's probably been taken out of the canon of English literature in the universities, being replaced by such sterling books as Rebecca Has Two Mommies or I Grew Up in the Hood, you know, important American literature, or The Racism of the White Male. But nevertheless, this great novel, Barry Lyndon, was turned to film by Kubrick back in 75. And it didn't make much money, but it's now considered, in retrospect, one of the greatest movies ever made. If you love architecture, if you love interiors, if you love fine acting, but more than that, it's the story of an Irish guy, like a, you know, like a roustabout from a little poorhouse somewhere in Ireland. And it's this odyssey of this guy, Barry Lyndon. And it's in two parts. But the background to this whole story is the Seven Years' War that was raging in Europe at the time in the 1700s, where one country was killing the men of the other country, the men of one country butchering the men of the other country. And the battle scenes, for example, of the British soldiers marching like toy soldiers directly into volleys of fire aimed at them, let's say, by the French or the Prussians, is something to behold, because you realize, as watching it, could you have actually stood there and marched to a drum as men around you after each volley were falling, screaming? I mean, you're talking about 50 caliber shots of lead. They tore your body to ribbons, and there were no medvacs. There was no battlefield treatment. The men just died on the spot, or they suffered and then died. But the point is, this is how wars were fought. Butchered for no reason, one country against the other, the Seven Years' War. So it's how he's conscripted into the army, then joins another army, then fakes his way into an army. Well, eventually, Barry Lyndon, the character, realizes that to get ahead in the world, he's going to have to marry up. And so he tries to marry a wealthy woman. And you'll see how he gets there and what happens. It's a phenomenal story of the rise and fall of an average man. And so I'm recommending it. That's all. No one's going to watch it because I said it. Did anyone ever see it? I know we're going to talk about suicides. I just wanted to distract you with other stuff. Trump warns Israel. That's because of his ties to Tillerson in Saudi Arabia. Suicide horror stories. Barry Lyndon movie. Background European Civil War. And I was going to talk also, if that's not enough for you, about the world's... take the red off it. I can't even see my own words. I can't read my own words here. World's riskiest dogs to own. You'll be quite surprised to find out that some of your little yappers are quite deadly.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
I'm
not in the mood. Years later, it doesn't mean anything. So we're talking about cheerful topics like suicide horror stories, world's riskiest dogs, the barfly and the barfighter within, where are the serious men, we're talking about. I'm on a bunch of stuff, that's all. I got loads of calls. Don't think I'm groping. We're sold out already. If you don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm not gonna go on and on with it, but it was, you know, it's been on the Drudge Report for quite a while now. Drama. Michael Savage cautions Trump about Inner Circle too much too soon. How could you disagree with me? How could you disagree that there's too much too soon and in the wrong order, by the way? They should just add, and in the wrong order. Why did he have to push the immigration thing last Friday? I know the answer to that one as well. Okay, I'll give you the insight on it. It came out in the Daily News, I think, today. I'm not sure. New York Daily News. There's a power struggle going on inside the Inner Circle. You have the son-in-law, the very, very accomplished Jared Kushner, a real estate mogul, and the daughter, Ivanka. What you must know is that Jared is an Orthodox Jewish man. He turns his phone off on Friday evening until Saturday evening. He practices the religious Sabbath. He does not use his phone. He doesn't drive, that whole thing. What happened was, the minute he turned his phone off last Friday and went into the mode of meditating, welcoming the Sabbath bride, is how the Jewish people do it. They go into another state of being. Another player inside the Trump administration, who we will affectionately call the bar fighter, plunged and pushed the executive order, getting Trump into the hot water of doing too much too soon. And so there's a fight going on for a power struggle with the throne. It's a very ancient struggle. You could trace a struggle like this back to King David, if you would like. Every religion, every race, every country understands power struggles. And this power struggle is no different. I pretty much know who's going to win. There's no question in my mind that blood rules. So I see what's coming. You may not. So don't be so quick to judge me wrong.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. The Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
You were a very outspoken critic of Donald Trump. I mean, famously saying before the election that you'd like to punch him in the face. Yeah!
He said that about somebody. He liked to punch him in the face. And how dare he say that in the crowd? How dare he say the things he does? Of course I want to punch him in the face.
Right. I mean, now what?
Now what?
You still be changing
anything, and it was only a symbolic thing anyway. It wasn't like I was going to go find him and punch him in the face. But he's got to hear it. He's got to hear it. You know, that's what he makes people feel.
It's enough already with the mook. De Niro became the mook that he said. You know, De Niro's looking like a bigger schmuck every day. Punch him in the face. That's the best he can do? All right, that's what you get from Hollywood today. So we got a twofer out of that. Here's another one for those of you who can't get enough immigrants, especially Muslims. Did you hear about what happened at the Louvre? The Louvre in France? Louvre terror attack. Egyptian man, who arrived in France last month, January, shot five times after attacking soldier with a machete. This wonderful Muslim asylum case was on the way to the Mona Lisa to rip it to shreds. You schmuck, you moron, you idiots, you stupid idiots. Why don't you invite him into your own house, you schmucks, you in Berkeley? You idiots, you! But all right. Assailant arrived in France at end of January. Louvre evacuated after soldier fires at attacker. Man armed with machete shouted, Allahu Akbar. Attacker was carrying two bags, two machetes. PM says attack was clearly terrorist in nature. So the French soldiers apparently know how to shoot straight. And they shot this piece of trash with Egyptian identity papers. And you want more of them in here. You want more of them in here. You want more of them in here. Bring more of them in. So they'll burn the museums to the ground like their ancestors did in Egypt. Did you know about that? Study the history, would you please? You know what happened soon after the Muslim conquest of Egypt? Because Egypt was not always Muslim, you know. It was a different worship system until Islam conquered Egypt. Oh, yeah, soon thereafter, the Muslims advanced civilization. They burned the Alexandria Library to the ground. So don't think this is something new under the sun. They believe in the monodimensional supremacy of a single book. All the other books they like to burn. And so when you hear about immigrants and asylees and morons at Berkeley, and bro, we're all no borders, no nation, F deportation. Oh boy, what morons. And you let those morons dictate the policy of a nation? Visitors kept inside the Louvre after soldier fires an attacker. Well, maybe they can now investigate this, because maybe the attacker wasn't really trying to cut the Mona Lisa up with the machete. Maybe there was some kind of cultural misunderstanding here. Maybe in Egypt they go into museums with machetes for other reasons. I don't know. It's possibly some other ritual of worship of European art that I can't fathom because I'm too much of a trilogite. I drag my knuckles. I don't understand it. So look, the fact is I understand nuance as well as the next guy. And if I can tell you about a movie like Barry Lyndon, and I understand that it's now considered one of the greatest films ever made, don't think I don't understand art, because I know art quite well. And the point is that, and here's an important point for you to know. See, my show is hard to listen to sometimes because I jump all over the place and say, well, why can't he stick to one thing? He started to talk about Israel. Then he talked about suicide. Then he talked about Barry Lyndon. I can't follow it. It's because it's not that kind of linear show. Linear is one thing. Savage is another. This is a three-dimensional, four-dimensional, five-dimensional program. So you got to be able to let your mind flex and flow with it. You know what I'm saying? See, given the fact that radio, AM radio, is a commercial medium, which it is, a lot of ads, I know that. And many of you are saying, oh, there's too many ads. Well, without them, there'd be no show at all. So let me be very clear about that. Thank God we have a lot of ads. I want more of them. But it breaks up the continuity for all of you civilized liberals, or those of you with phenomenal nuance who seem to love NPR and, you know, no ads and things like that, and Vivaldi music that you could commit suicide to in between the all the overpaid fools at NPR. And I want Donald Trump to cut off all funding to NPR. I want to see these hotshots, see if they can get a job in the real world of commentary, see who would hire them. All these schmucks making $500,000 a year at NPR. They should be cut off at the knees. No money for NPR. Now let's get back to the nuanced things. If I could talk about Barry Lyndon, the movie, and I understand that Kubrick not only shot each frame of that movie as though it was a painting, but he selected each piece of music, because he was a great lover of classical music. He selected every piece of music in that film to match every scene. So what I'm saying to you is, I understand what matches with what. Probably more so than you may imagine. But when I'm in radio, it's a rough and tumble world. This is a rough and tumble business that I am in. And I have to be able to get up here and mud wrestle with the people. I have to be able to mud wrestle with time. I have to mud wrestle with all of the components that are flowing around. I have to keep ideas flowing in the air. And don't think I'm groping for calls. You know, there are days in radio that you throw out 15 fishing lines with the greatest bait and no one calls. You know that, don't you? Today, there's no way to get into this show. And I knew it would happen. I knew what would happen. We don't have enough bait right now for the callers. We don't have enough fishing rods. We can't take on any more fish on the boat. It's impossible. If we take in any more fish into the hold, the ship will go down. But I haven't taken a call yet. What is this with my loquaciousness? I don't understand it. Where does it come from? How do I do this? A normal man of my age and of my accomplishments and of my, let us say, status wouldn't be doing this anymore. But then I ask myself, what else is there to do? There's nothing else to do out there. Like, again, going back to the film Barry Lyndon. So all of these extremely wealthy aristocrats in the 1700s who lived in these palaces with the finest of art and the finest of this and the finest of that and all the servants, how did they spend their afternoons? Playing cards with each other? That's what they did. They played cards with each other. Well, this happens to go on in wealthy circles today. A lot of wealthy men do nothing but play cards in the afternoon. They gamble. Did you know that? Or they prostitute themselves. So that's what they prostitute themselves with, you know, hookers. Or they gamble, or they do both. Now, what kind of life is that for anybody? So that's why I come back to gagging on food and doing radio. I mean, I just reheated a hamburger from last night. I'm giving you an example. I gave Teddy the other half. He loved it. I could not give it to him. He smelled the meat in the microwave reheating. I had a power lunch. And I asked myself, why am I doing this? Well, first of all, I love radio. And the ideas are everything to me. And I love the ideas that are floating around in the world, and we're living through revolutionary times. And, of course, I had a lot to do with Trump winning. We know that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you over and over again, but don't forget it for 1 minute. Don't let the Johnny-come-lately who attacked him for a year all of a sudden love him to tell you they elected him. It had nothing to do with it any more than she did the barfly. The barfly ripped into him for one straight year. And if you push me on it, I'll play her sound bites again until you finally hear it. 1 year in a row, the barfly attacked him. February 10th, she said, he's for the little guy, but he's actually built a lot of his businesses on the backs of the little guy. March 8th, she said, Trump victims include victims of Trump University, victims of Trump in Atlantic City. April 25th, the barfly said, I would like to see Trump's tax returns be transparent. February 9th, the barfly said, he's using vulgar language. That's unfortunate for children. April 13th, the barfly said, Trump can whine and complain by saying the system is rigged, but there's no place in politics for accusing folks of using Gestapo tactics. April 4th, the barfly accused the Trump campaign of becoming too cozy with the establishment. April 6th, the barfly said Trump's false accusations about the Cruz campaign show the danger of just saying things that aren't true. And then on and on. Now all of a sudden she's the greatest spokesmouth for him and comes up with the Green Hornet thing today that already turned her into a laughingstock. I'm trying to tell you something. Something's wrong with this whole picture. Moreover, look, let's start again. You're going to get mad at me. Put aside the fact that she looks like she's been on a bender every night the night before. I said, okay, you can love a woman even if she looks like she's been on a bender. I mean, it's a product I advertise on my show. Maybe we can send her a box. But I think she's beyond the product, frankly. When you look like you've been on a bender all night and you freshened up in the morning and came to work with a new $6,000 outfit, there's only so much mileage you can get out of that one. The end of it for me was the outfit for the funeral. Every day another $6,000 dress and then telling people who voted for drop dead, go wear spandex. Why am I not allowed to say this? Tell me why I have to sit here like a schmuck and lick the boots of everybody who works for him. Some of them are wrong for him. And I'm making a prediction anyway. She's not going to be there forever. She's there to be a lightning rod to take the heat. She throws her into the lion's den every day. She takes the heat. She'll be burned up and thrown out. And what she's looking to do right now, mark my words, she's grandstanding hoping she'll be the next Megyn Kelly. End of story. It's all about her. I'm sick of it. Get a classy woman in there if you need a woman altogether. I said hire Laura Ingraham. She was too classy? What was wrong with that one? Who elbowed her out? Who gave her the elbow in the ribs? You had a top flight, super person, Laura Ingraham, who happens to speak many languages, Supreme Court, a clerk for Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. This is a class act. I'm sorry, I don't like turning it on and seeing Faye Dunaway in Barfly 40 years later. Where is Faye Dunaway today? I guarantee you Faye Dunaway, no, let's forget her. You know, let's not go down that route of time and gravity. It catches up with all of us. But these are important stories. These are very important stories. And there's all sorts of things going on that I'm very interested in that I would be talking about anyway if I wasn't on the radio. So, you know, I'm lucky and you're lucky. Trump issues new sanctions over Iran missile test. On the face of it, it makes sense to constrain Iran. Iran is a rogue nation. Religious fanatics who will destroy the world if they're not stopped are dangerous. Now, why would he have to make this so public again? Tell me why he has to make it so public. Why does he have to be so pugilistic about everything he does? Why can't, now that he won, be quiet, step back, stop with the tweeting, conduct himself firmly in the background, behind closed doors? Why must he show everyone how tough he is? That's starting to bother me. I don't like the macho approach in a president. I don't care whether they're left or right. I don't like it. It may have worked on the campaign trail. It doesn't work in the real world because there are other macho men out there. And if they pick up your challenge and you back off, tell me how that's going to look. Let's see. Drew a line in the sand with China over the South China Sea. Drew a line in the sand with Mexico over the wall and paying for it. Drew a line in the sand with Iran. I'm not the only one who sees this, by the way. Pat Buchanan, who's a brilliant man, said the same thing. How many lines can he draw in the sand until someone challenges him and crosses that line? And then what he's going to do? What's he going to do? Be able to have another Obama? I am sorry. This is called constructive criticism. This is something he's not going to hear either from the bar fly or from the bar fighter. But he's hearing it from the man who helped get him elected. Donald Trump, we love you, but you better start listening to your friends, not those in it for themselves. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. You know, Valentine's Day is going to be here very, very soon, and you're probably, what should I get? I don't know what to get. Well, Pro Flowers happens to be making it easier this year than ever. They've removed all the guesswork. Listen to me very carefully. I'm going to give you an offer that expires today. On top of their already low prices, right now you can get a dozen assorted roses with free glass vase for $19.99, plus shipping and handling. And this week only, you can also get chocolates for free. That's a twofer. Or upgrade, and for $9.99 more, you can get two dozen assorted roses with free glass vase and chocolates. How? You go to proflowers.com, my code SAVAGE. You pick your flowers, you're checked out in 2 minutes. Pick any day that you want. You can send it wherever you want. And there's the only one way to get the one dozen assorted roses with free glass vase and the free chocolate starting at $19.99. You go to proflowers.com, click on the blue mic on the top right, type in SAVAGE. That's proflowers.com. Click on the mic, top right, type in code SAVAGE. Please don't wait. The order expires today. You got it? Do it now. Now the calls. 855-407-2282. That's the phone number. WABC Ted, go ahead, please. You are criticizing me for being too harsh on Trump.
Well, Michael, I'm a 15-year listener of you. I literally love you. I bought every one of your books. I'm a huge fan. It has nothing to do with that. Yesterday you were going on about Yemen and how, you know, this is all going wrong under Trump and Kellyanne Conway. And I understand you feeling a little personally shunned by, once you got in office, maybe the inauguration invite or whatever it may be. I get it. But I think that you're being a little too harsh. And a lot of people that, you know, are on the Breitbart comment boards and different things have been saying, you know, Michael is really going after Trump. And with all the leftist...
But wait, let's slow down. First of all, let's clear the air. Breitbart's never been a fan of Michael Savage. Breitbart is run by Steve Bannon, who was inside the White House. Steve Bannon has always been jealous of Michael Savage. Steve Bannon tried a radio show that failed on Sirius XM. So let's get things in order. That's number one. Nobody on Breitbart likes me because I'm a competitor of theirs, and I'm far more talented than any one of those people who tried radio. And that's, by the way, with due respect for those who write great columns for him. So please don't quote my enemy or my competitor and tell me that what they're saying is the truth.
Well, Michael, Alex Marlowe praises you literally on a weekly.
Right, I love Alex Marlowe. I love him.
So I mean, like, they don't hate you necessarily, but what
I understand, but who pays Alex Marlowe? Who pays Alex Marlowe's bills?
I don't know if Bannon's really involved with Breitbart right now.
Oh, you don't know? Well, you don't know, huh? Why, did he disconnect from Breitbart? Did he break all ties with Breitbart?
I would imagine he has a pretty...
I think it's quite odd, by the way, that Breitbart News is now running America. I think it's quite odd.
Well, wouldn't you rather Breitbart News be running America than, say, the New York Times running America? Or?
I don't want any news running America. I don't want any news organization running America. All journalism is biased. All websites are biased. All of them are tabloid websites. I don't want any tabloid website running the country. I mean, if you're seeking a hot headline, you'll plunge into China. If you need another headline, you'll say, we're throwing all the Muslims out. I mean, if you want headlines, it's very easy to do. It doesn't make for good diplomacy, nor good policy.
Well, Mick, isn't it time for a little swing in our direction after what's been going on?
Okay, I understand the sentiment, but you didn't hear me when I said this, and I'll say it again. There's a way to achieve your ends. There's a way to get elected, but you stop pretending, you stop running for office when you're president. You stop tweeting at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you stop threatening countries when you're president. How long can this go on until a disaster occurs? Why can't it be done quietly?
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show. The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
If you actually listen to my show, I talk on two. It's all about rhythmic things. So Trump issues new sanctions over Iran missile test. Now Iran's threatening us back. The French shot an immigrant from Egypt who ran into the Louvre shouting Allahu Akbar, wanting to slash the Mona Lisa. But you want more of them in the country, all you schmuck liberals, till they cut your head off. Then who are you going to blame then? Who are you going to blame them then? Donald Trump? Idiots? Morons? Wake up. What sane nation on earth brings people in who live in the 15th century who hate your aunt, your very life? Moron! But I'm in talk radio. I'm not a president. And what I say on the radio is one thing. What you do as a president is another. There are ways to get things done as a president that are different from the ways you say things when you're running for office or when you are on the radio. I like everything Trump did. Everything he did, I like. Everything, thank God. The style is starting to get to me a little because I think it's too gruff for the world that we're living in. You say, well, we need gruff. I don't think we need gruff. A strong man doesn't have to act strong. A really tough man does not have to show you how tough he is to get things done. You just get it done in a quiet way. You apply pressure behind the scenes, but you don't humiliate people in public. You don't humiliate nations in public unless you want them to fight with you. Now, if you want them to fight with you, that's a good thing to do. Then maybe you can go to war with China. Maybe you can go to war with Mexico. You can have Viva Zapata again on the border. Maybe you want war with Iran, unleashing a wave of missile attacks. What are you going to do, sit here and cheer? Hey, go Donald! Go! Love it! Love it! Love it! I like his policies. I don't like the style. It's too pugilistic. And I think it's because he's being led by people who don't understand nuance or policy at all. You say, well, how do I know these things? Because I'm on the radio doesn't mean that's the only thing I am. I also live in another world, or several other worlds. I get things done in worlds that I never talk about. And it has to be done quietly and with negotiations, which require a lot of skill and a lot of patience. You can't just bully people into what you want. As much as we would like to get things done our way when we want them, that is not the way business works. It's not the way the world works. It may have worked when you're building a hotel or you're building a gambling casino. It doesn't work when you're dealing with China or Mexico or Iran, for that matter. That is what I'm trying to say to you. No one is saying that to him because everyone's afraid to say a word to Donald Trump for fear that he will be unhappy with them. That's a dangerous thing. Now, I know many of you don't like hearing this. You want me to sit here like a cheerleader, licking his boots, day and night saying, go Donald, you're great, because you're still thinking like a child. Either you're with him or you're against him. That is wrong. That is 100% wrong. He's being steered too quickly in the wrong directions. That's why I wrote the article. WorldNet Daily wrote it. It was on WorldNet Daily. Then the Drudge Report posted it. And people are talking about it. Do you think I'm making friends with it? Do you think I wrote it to make friends? Do you think I'm stupid? You think this is going to ingratiate me with anyone in the Trump inner camp? Do you think I think that as a result of this, they're going to invite me to the Russian state dinner? I don't think so. Why am I doing it then? Why? I'm talking with you the same way I spoke with you for the whole year that I supported Donald Trump. As plainly as I can. As directly as I can. And I think that our president, who we put in office, needs to go a little more slowly and a little more quietly. It's that simple. And I believe that the people near him need to be put into the background. And some, let us say, more deliberate people put in the foreground. That's it. I've said enough on it. And we're talking about suicide as well. Because it's a big epidemic right now. Let me take a suicide call. Dave on WBOB in Jacksonville, line 3. What are you calling about? What's your topic?
Hello, Michael. I am a huge fan of Barry Lyndon, and I was so excited to hear you mention it earlier. And I happen to carry around with me in my wallet, plus I have it posted in my office, the epilogue from that film. And it says, good or bad, handsome or ugly, rich or poor, they are all equal now. And I'm also...
Well, they're talking about it. Remember who wrote this novel and in the years it was written. What he meant was is that rich or poor, good or bad, they are all equal now, meaning what? They're all on the ground, right?
They're all on the ground, exactly. And I'm also a suicide survivor. And so I carry that around with me to remind me when I think of things a little too seriously that one of these days, you know, it'll all be over and we'll all be equal. And
right, well, I don't want to dwell on the suicide survivor. You mean you actually tried to do it?
Yes, that's correct. About 10 years ago. And...
when you said you tried, did you really try, or you were like faking?
I tried big time. In fact, it's something of a miracle that it didn't take. It was a combination of means, actually, and it was a miracle that that I came through it. So I felt that I
was... without dwelling on how you tried, I'm not going to indulge myself and try to milk you for that. It's a horrible story either way. But we're talking about the film Barry Lyndon, which I saw last night.
Right.
Which is based upon Thackeray's great novel. I am positive that the dunces who are now in the universities, who never belonged in universities to begin with, you know, they study rioting 101, sex with strangers 102,
right.
Animalistic religions 103. They know nothing about literature. They hate everything that's decent and good. They never heard of Thackeray. Instead, they're reading literature written by total illiterates. But Thackeray wrote this book. So it was based on great literature, and the director, being who he was, one of the greatest directors in history, he did things that no one has done in film ever since. So when you say that you carried that around with you as a suicide survivor, what does that do for you to know that at the end we're all equaled out?
Well, when I first came out of the attempt, I had a very strong faith, and I felt, you know, hey, God saw me through this. I'm not supposed to be dead. I'm supposed to be alive. And it's been a lot of years, and so I can't say that.
But you said the word God. Didn't you just say God?
God, yes, sir.
So are you now a believer in God?
Yes. In fact, I carry, you did a show about talismans a month or so ago. I carry around a cross in my pocket that I rub.
Wait, this is very important. Were you a God believer before you tried to commit suicide?
I was really not. And I don't think...
So what did I say earlier? I said any God-fearing person cannot commit suicide because there's not a faith on earth that permits suicide for very good reason. And the belief system is that we are only a human being. We belong to a higher power. The higher power controls our end, not us. It's probably the most... Would you agree with me that suicide is perhaps one of the most egotistical acts that a human can engage in?
I have to tell you that when you get to the depths of depression and circumstances are so bad, you even then can think, well, maybe God will forgive me. You know, you even forget that part of it. But what I can't forget is the horror that it would leave behind for people.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
It's the most selfish act an individual can perform.
Yeah.
There's a case here in the area in which I live with a very beloved comedian.
Sure.
who committed suicide, and he did so a few feet away from his wife's bedroom, leaving her to find the corpse. That was not an act of heroism to me.
Yeah, when you get that low, it's hard to keep it all in.
I understand, but if a man wants to eliminate his life, couldn't he go into the woods somewhere and do it where nobody would find him right away, where the wife wouldn't find him two feet away from the bedroom?
First of all,
suicide is also an act of aggression. Don't you agree?
Yes, I think it is. He was at a point where he couldn't even process what he was doing, and I've got to keep myself to a point where I can at least keep the awareness going that there are people I care about who would care and whose lives would be affected.
Well, let me put this out there in the airwaves. Let me walk people down this road because I started this topic and I may have to help some people right now. Suicide is an epidemic in this country right now for a number of reasons. I want you to think very carefully if you are a man or a woman with a family. I want you to think about your wife or your husband or your child or your mother finding you and what it will look like and what it will do to them. I want you to think about after you are dead, what happens then. The they come with a body bag. They pick the mess up with rubber gloves and throw you into a body bag and then haul you away like a sack of wet garbage. Do people understand that that's what follows, and that if there is this thing of people living after they die looking back down, is that what you want to look at? Is it people hauling you away like a sack of wet garbage?
In mind, because
I'm sorry, sometimes you have to be pretty ugly to make a point, don't you?
Well, one of the last things that goes, and I think what was going through my head 10 years ago, was a lot of suicide, folks who commit suicide are thinking, ultimately, that everybody would be better off without them. That these people, yeah, they might grieve, but they'd be better off without me. And my life would, you know, the world would be better off.
In other words, you're such a miserable creep around them, you're bringing everyone down.
Right. And also, too, yeah, exactly. The circumstances you bring to them are negative. But if you remember...
Yeah, but, we come on. Sure. We all have those feelings when we get depressed. We all go into the serious downers where we can't get out of them. The trick is, what techniques do you use? What medications, if necessary? What do you do to get out of these depths of horror?
Well, medication is part of it, I have to admit. I think it's something that's plagued me throughout my entire life, and it always will. And so, if I can...
All right, well, look, I don't want to dwell on it because I don't want to trigger anything in you right now. I can hear you probably getting depressed even thinking about it right now. I think what's interesting is that you caught on you picked up on the issue of the movie I love, Barry Lyndon, which is a very obscure movie, by the way, and done in 1975, but it was so overwhelmingly great based upon Thackeray's novel, as I said. And, of course, the end, the epilogue really said it all, right? Say it again, David. What does the epilogue say?
All right. I'll, what's on here? Okay.
Pull it out of your pocket. What does the epilogue of this epic movie say?
Of George III, that the aforesaid personages lived and quarreled. Good or bad, handsome or ugly, rich or poor, they are all equal now.
Now you talk about a literate statement compared to today, right? Isn't that beautiful? Okay, David, I'm sending you a copy of Trump's War. I should start giving them out again today. I forgot about the book myself because there's so much else going on that I have to talk about. 855-407-2828. I'm going to only take a few more of the suicide calls because I'm getting a lot of them right now. It's very, very tough to deal with this subject. And we want to talk about the Trump taking hard position topic. We want to talk about the bar fly and the bar fighter around him. Maybe they're not the right advisors. Maybe he needs some quieter, more sober individuals. Maybe he needs to conduct his diplomacy behind closed doors instead of on Twitter. Why is this an irrelevant question? Why is this not allowed to be asked? Tell me. Okay, let's put it the other way. You want a pugilistic president for the next 4 years? Maybe that's what you want. Maybe you say they deserve it because of the way they've been treating us. Perhaps that's what you're saying. Maybe we need a bombastic, pugilistic president for the next 4 years to put everybody in place. All right, let's see if it works. We got to give it a little time. It's only been a week or so. I'll be back 2 weeks now. Be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation. There's so much good sound I haven't gotten. Do we have Robert Reich, the mental midget, the UC Berkeley useless idiot who collects a big fat check for sitting there like a dunce? Remember him? The labor secretary under one of the former Dems? Here's a schmuck who collects a fortune as a tenured professor at Berkeley. God knows what he does there. He claims Breitbart News organized the Berkeley riots. Now, if this is not a sign of a mentally illiberal, I'd like to know what is. Do we have this Schmendrick? I know it's... It should be here. If not, okay, we don't need it. People don't know who Robert Reich is. They remember a guy who looked like Humpty Dumpty sitting on a wall who didn't reach the floor. And there he is. These are guys, they get thrown out of government. The next thing to do is they teach. On the East Coast, they generally go to Georgetown or NYU. On the West, and they want to go West, they go to Berkeley. And they sit there, they collect $150,000 a year from Benny's. They teach about an hour a week, if that. You know, student contact hours, the great man comes in and belches into the book. And that's the whole job, a tenured professor. Now he says Breitbart News organized the Berkeley riots. You hear this? And I pay for that with my taxes in this rotten state? the state of insanity of California? Former Labor Secretary, UC Berkeley professor, Robert Reich, claimed the Breitbart News helped to organize the violent riots. Can you believe a thing like this? Well, anyway, the point is that Trump should withhold funds. Because I blame Robert Reich, I blame Nancy Pelosi, I blame Dianne Feinstein. And the reason I blame Nancy Pelosi is not just for effect. She gave graduation commencement speeches at Berkeley as near as 2014, in which she said, be a disruptor, to great cheers from the unwashed potheads down there. Be a disruptor? That's what makes you great, being a disruptor? What would happen if 1,000 of these disruptors came to her mansion and disrupted her life, God forbid? It'd be a horrible thing, wouldn't it? So she likes when they burn down my university, where my alma mater, Berkeley. It's because of the left-wing vermin who've taken over that campus. You know, it's one thing to be a dissenter. It's another thing to be a liberal. It's another thing to be a Democrat. It's another thing to have an opposition viewpoint. And it's quite another thing to break glass, to beat people up, and to burn buildings down. And I blame the chancellor. The chancellor should be thrown out of the University of California. A weak chin nobody. The police were hamstrung. There were no Berkeley police there. The campus police are like worthless. They did nothing. They were told to do nothing. They're all to blame. And this has to stop. Trump should call out the National Guard the next time these masked cowards come out with their black masks and their pipes. Bring out the National Guard. Smash them down.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
He was living on one side of Union Turnpike. I was living on the other. It's like the two sides of the tracks. We didn't know each other. He went to the New York Military Academy. I was schlepping on the bus to Queens College. I was working a job after school in the slush. I don't know what he was doing after school, probably learning how to build buildings with his dad. Two different worlds. But that's the way the world is. Here we are today, and now we're living in the same world. Now play the Latin music, because if it's Friday, it's almost sundown on the East Coast. Soon the lights go out, and the Kushner's phones go off. We don't know. There could be a war by the 2 hours from now. The bar fighter could launch a war against Russia, for all we know. I was trying to talk, and until I could talk, it took so long, so I'm making up for it. That could be an explanation for it. I wonder if breech babies are more loquacious, and if breech babies go into the talking professions. It's like they were because it's an eternity when you're in there, right? Till you get out. To you, it's like 10 minutes. To the doctor, 5 minutes. The legs. First the feet, then the legs. And you're in there gagging. And you don't know if you're going to drown or die. So the minute you come out, you start yelling and talking and screaming. Maybe that can explain the breech baby. And people who have normal births, maybe they're quiet people. Librarians somewhere in Des Moines, Iowa. Librarians at UC Berkeley. Who knows? Who knows? What was I going to tell you? So the thing is this. The thing is this. When you go to music, there are ways to drown out depression. You don't have to go for medication. Civilization, in many ways, you could see as a counterpoint to the blues. Now, I understand it sounds simplistic, and we're supposed to think depression is greater today than it ever was. Are we to believe that in the distant past, our ancestors had no depression? How did they get through life? They're living on like corn husks. Babies were dying of typhoid fever. How did they get through life? They didn't have to go to some psychiatrist and take a Prozac. How did they get through it? What, they were stupider than you? Why is it they were able to deal with such tragic events in life, half the time starving to death, no love, no heat, no light, no electricity? The Huns were everywhere. The sons were conscripted and thrown into armies. Horrible lives. No hygiene. How did they get through life? They didn't cry every 2 minutes and scream for a pill and medication and a group therapy with a napkin in their hand. How did they get through it? How did they get through it? How did they get through it? What did they use? Well, okay, I'll tell you the answer, because I have the answer to everything. There is an answer to that as well. It's not that complicated. First of all, almost everyone listening to the show, you go back a few generations, they were all very religious people. That's number one. Christian, Jewish, they were super religious people in the old world. That's if they were in the old world. But even if they were in this world, they were religious. That's number one. In other words, they had faith. With faith, they could overcome anything. Without faith, you can't overcome anything. Period. End of story. All you can do is hate. Without faith, you wind up like the faithless left-wing fools that you saw in Berkeley the other day. They have faith only in their fire and their flame and their pipes until someone comes along with bigger fire, bigger flame, and bigger pipes and puts them down like the mad dogs they are, which is what is going to happen. Trump will call out the National Guard next time they try this, since there is no government in the state of California. But I want to go back to the bigger topic that I'm talking about. We're talking about depression today and suicide in the Savage Nation. And, of course, that incorporates an awful lot of other things as we're discussing those topics. Why is it that we think that our pain today is greater than the pain of our ancestors when our ancestors didn't have a scintilla of the comforts of life that we have today or the distractions? Ah, my friends, there's the rub. Because the distractions themselves provoke insanity. The distractions themselves provoke depression and anxiety, my friends. In other words, if you're depressed and you go and watch a movie produced by Harvey Weinstein or by one of the other psychotics in Hollywood, you're going to come away sicker than you were when you went into the theater. They pick the sickest people in the world. First of all, the people with the most demented go to Hollywood for a career. And then if they're really sick, they wind up on the top of the heap, really demented and really perverted. The sicker they are, the higher they rise and the faster they rise. So then when they get there, what do? They surround themselves with people as crazy as them. Talented, yes. Gifted, yes, but crazy. So they hire crazy people to come up with plots that are implausible. They have no continuity, no sense whatsoever. It's all madness. And if it's not mad enough, they put the guy in a motel somewhere in Palm Springs with mescaline. And then they get him as many sex outlets as they can get him. They keep him, you know, like knocked up in a room for 3 days until he comes up with a crazier script than the guy before him. Bingo, then you have a Judge Apatow movie, in my opinion. That's how those movies get produced. Then the next thing you know is they're giving you political thought. Trump should be this, Trump should be that, da-da-da. Nazi for banning Muslims. This is what happens when you live in your own world and you get too rich too fast. You start to believe that you're right about everything. But if you watch a film like Barry Lyndon, as I did last night, as I've been telling you, a 1975 three-hour film, because it's based upon great literature, there was a time in America when every movie was based upon a book. Did you know that? When did that end? When did it start that every movie was not based on a book? Well, that's when basically novels stopped being sufficiently interesting or of any merit for a film. That's when. And the audience got stupider. Let's not go into the educational system in America and what they're teaching there. You can follow a plot with a storyline, unless there's a car chase, or an alien, or bling coming off someone's teeth. How am I going to watch a movie like that? Talking slang? How are you going to watch a movie with literate English and sit through it for more than 2 seconds? They're not going to go to that movie, unless the F word is conjugated 30 different ways, or the MF word is conjugated 40 different ways. They're not going to sit through the theater. So what I'm saying to you is you go for a distraction, you come out crazier than you went in and more depressed. So you stop going to the movies and you turn on the television. Did you ever scan through the dial of a television set and see what's in there? Have you seen the craziness that comes out of that screen, the black screen? You think that's not affecting your depression? Now you could tie it to other things. Now, your grandfather ate whole wheat and you didn't. Okay, fine. I've read it all. I wrote books on it. He got the B vitamins and you didn't. There's probably truth in that. Niacin deficiency is probably a great part of a lot of our depression. If you believe Abraham Hoffer, who was one of the greatest minds of our generation, never heard of him though, MD, PhD, wrote books, developed. He's the man who discovered niacin and its ability to lower cholesterol, and he gave it away for free because he wasn't a greedy piece of garbage like most people are today. 1949, he discovered that niacin reduces cholesterol levels. And I once asked him when he was alive, how come he didn't patent it? He said, because I wanted to help humanity. I wasn't thinking about getting rich. Can you imagine that? Now, compare that with the scientists of today in the universities about humanity. The word humanity doesn't enter anyone's mind anymore. So we're living in a world where there is no humanity, fundamentally, and we're all feeling it. if we're particularly, you know, sensitized or sensitive. We feel that, so people get depressed. So I was reading this article about the stress and the isolation and the high number of suicides and the suicide clusters that are rocking so-called Ivy League campuses. And these kids are awesome kids, but here's one of them. A literature student from Morocco, a 21-year-old budding journalist, and a 29-year-old Navy veteran offed themselves. So someone says, you have a child who comes from Middle America. He was surrounded by kids who had a social life, and he just didn't connect with the kids, meaning when he gets to Colombia. He was popular at home, but not at Colombia. And it was the pressure of the school, the mom said, echoing a common theme among students who spoke to the New York Post. And the relentless academic stress and the failure of the school to proactively address student... That I don't believe. It's not a school's place to proactively address student mental health issues. Okay, it's not a mental hospital. If you want to send your kid to a mental hospital, send him to a mental hospital. That's not the purpose of a university. See, this is stupid. Now the parents are saying the college is supposed to provide mental health counseling. Why? Why? What do you mean? That's not the purpose of a university. What, it has to be an all-in-one, like a smorgasbord? It's all coming at you at once, said the freshman. This is such a good school that everybody here has earned getting in. They're all very smart. You realize as these deaths are happening that maybe some people maybe feel it more than you do. So then they talk about all the deaths. Uriel Flores, 29, shot himself with a shotgun in his Nutley, New Jersey home 10 minutes before his mother returned home from work. A Navy veteran who served as a medic in Iraq and Afghanistan, Flores had left behind 24 handwritten suicide notes, said his sister Natalie Candela, 43. Depression and PTSD had taken a heavy toll, she said. So these are very sad stories. So, what are they blaming it on? Stress, isolation, PTSD? It's all true. There's no knocking it. There's no denying it. We're living through a very, very stressful time. But my argument has been that these are not more stressful times than our ancestors lived through. So why is there such an epidemic of suicide is the issue. I mean, and I would think that it's a matter of faithlessness. And if you say that a person has no faith, you're also saying they have no religious community to fall back upon. Because if a person has a faith, whether they be, let's say, Jewish or Christian, the dominant religion in America, it means they go to church. It means they have a community. It means they're a part of a congregation. It means that at least once a week, they're seeing like-minded congregants. They're talking, they're feeling like they're part of something bigger than themselves. And maybe they have a few friends in that group. And in that socialization through religion, they have salvation. And when you turn your back on your own religion and you start to say you're a cynic and you don't believe in anything, well, who do you fall back upon? So again, it comes back to a book I read many, many years ago. The book was called Life is with People. It was by an anthropologist, I believe. And at the end of the day, that's 100% true. Life is with people. And it's the oldest story in the world. If you're feeling blue, get out. Go talk to people. Go to a dance. Go hear some music. It's that simple. You say, I can't do it if I'm that depressed. Maybe it's true. Then find someone who can help you do it. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna-esque about it, but truthfully, not everything has to be seen as impossible odds that you can't overcome. The world may be a terrible place right now. We may look around and see chaos everywhere and anarchy wherever we turn because of the liberals who have let things run wild in the streets as they do in Berkeley. But there's a bigger world than the vermin in Berkeley. Trust me on that. All right, it's enough of me preaching for the Friday afternoon. Let's see, it's 1:46 on the West. And that means it's almost sundown on the East Coast. Well, when I come back from this break, let's pray that as Jared Kushner has turned off his iPhone and gone to his Jewish Sabbath, the adventurer within the administration doesn't cause Mr. Trump to write another executive order that plunges us into a war. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Valentine's Day is probably the most beautiful of all holidays. I mean, it's about love. This is about love. And, you know, you got to get a unique gift for the woman that you love. It's that simple. But if you're a woman, why, you can't get one for the man you love? I'm telling you, there's no better gift than this one. Shari's Berries, you've heard me talk about them before. But what they are is another story. Freshly dipped strawberries, starting at just $19.99 plus shipping. Or truthfully, for today only, double the berries for just $5 more. You just need my code to take advantage of this remarkable deal. Savage. The deal will not last long. The berries are phenomenal. The berries can be topped in dark chocolate or white chocolate. Chocolate chips, swizzles, shop nuts. You can surprise her at office or the workplace. You can get other gifts. But listen to me. With Valentine's Day right around the corner, here's the only way to get this amazing deal. Freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 or double the berries for just $5. It's an exclusive offer for my listeners only. We're trying this out today. Only when you use my code SAVAGE. You go to berries.com, berries.com. Click on the mic in the top right. Type in SAVAGE. Berries.com, click on the mic, top right, type in SAVAGE. This amazing deal won't last long, so order now. All of this music originated amongst workers, field workers. So they used instruments that they had at hand. So they would play things like a cowbell and turn it into an instrument. It's a very interesting story. And, of course, to some extent, it went up to the level of 16-piece orchestras, as you would see in Cuba, such as Orquesta Aragón. Now you say, well, is it as great as Beethoven being played? Or is it? No, of course not. But it's different, and it's also great in its own way. It's like saying, is Coltrane or any of the other great jazz artists as great as? Well, you can't compare them. It's what does it do for your mind and what does it do for your soul is the issue, not about who's better. That's where I come from. KSFO Reuben, line 5, what's on your mind? Fire away, you're on the air. Just give us the shot.
The rise in suicides on college campuses, at least in my view, is a direct correlation of the anti-human propaganda.
Bingo. Bingo, that's right. These kids basically come from middle America. They come from decent Christian homes. And they get to these psycho wards like Columbia University, and they're told day and night God doesn't exist. White males should commit suicide. There's white privilege. They're no good. The white race should die. Everything the white people did was no good. And you wonder why there's a suicide epidemic? That has something to do with it, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, my wife is a grad student at SFSU, so in the election cycle, I'd be out there talking to kids, you know, about Trump and why I'm voting for him.
And the hatred that came at you was enough to make you very, very angry. We're out of time. I'll be back. I hope you're here.
Join the Savage Nation. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
So we've been talking about a lot of things. I can't summarize it all. If you just joined us, sorry. I can't even go back to where I started. But one of the topics I brought up today was suicide, the suicide epidemic. And now I'm not going to make a jump cut that you can't follow here, but remember I told you the other day that a pretty famous cinematographer is coming to film me tomorrow? Well, he's coming to film me tomorrow. A short 10-minute starter. It's a starter which I'm going to offer for free. I'm not selling anything, although there's nothing wrong with selling something in the world in which we live. I mean, I'm not a communist. We're going to do a 5 to 10 minute documentary. He's a great filmmaker. Maybe one day I'll tell you who he is if he wants to be told. Coming with a lighting man to one of my hidden locations. And he said, I just want you to talk about your childhood, you know, in your father's market and you as a child, you know, who you were. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow. So I was thinking about that because we're talking about who we are today and how so many kids go off the rails and suicide and all of that. So I found something I want to read for you. It's so original. You never heard it on radio, even though it's the third hour and it's different than the other 2 hours. This is an original piece, never read on radio. It's something I wrote for a forthcoming book. It may wind up in the God book. I don't know where it's going to wind up. It's certainly not going to be in Trump's war. It's 2 pages long. And I think that it's important I read it to you in light of what I've been talking about thus far. Kids, alienation, things like that. And even the movie Barry Lyndon, which is an epic of a man's life. So here's a scene called Lonesome Boy on Cold Sand. Try to picture a boy about 11 years old. Thin, small, walking alone, aimlessly on a cold beach in Far Rockaway, New York, in the middle of the winter. No one was around. The boardwalk was empty. The hotels were silent. What was the boy doing, wandering almost like a bumblebee who'd been sprayed with Raid in the sand? What was going on? Well, I was that boy. You see, inside one of the hotels on that wintry day, there was a Boy Scout dinner for fathers and sons. It was a fathers and sons Boy Scout dinner. Well, I had gone, and it was on a Sunday, I believe. And my father worked 7 days a week in his little store trying to put bread on the table, pay the rent, pay the car bills. And he wasn't with me. I was alone. I was always alone. No father in that regard. He had to work, and I understood it. But it seemed to me all the other boys had fathers with them, and they were happy. And then something happened in the middle of the dinner where it suddenly dawned on me that I had no father, not when I needed him. And for some reason, I don't know what it was that triggered me. I remember almost running out of that room on my own. And disappearing onto the cold sand, and walking by myself. I didn't know where I was going. I don't think I was walking into the ocean to kill myself, but I really don't know. I don't know what was in the mind of that 11-year-old boy. It's very hard to say. But I do know that out of nowhere there came the scout leader. I remember his name to this day, and a few other men looking for me. And I turned around, and there were these kind men. There was Mr. Aronson, and he didn't yell at me. He didn't scream and say, "What are you doing?" as my father would have done. He was kind, and he reached out to me, and he took me in his arm, and he took me back in, and I felt that I was just protected. In many ways, the story is a great metaphor for those of us who are wandering like lost souls seeking our Father, or more importantly, our Father in Heaven, God. And I'll have more to say about this later on in this book. And that's Lonesome Boy on Cold Sand for the Savage Nation. How's that for an original offering for radio? Right? You didn't hear politics in it. You didn't hear anything you could hear anywhere else. And it's for you. It's my gift to you this Friday. And now on to the callers and on to the show. I'm thinking about what to do tomorrow for that little 10-minute film. Everything that's done right has to take so much time. I'm going to just sit there for 10 minutes and talk. It's easy for me to just talk. What am I going to talk about? Well, he wants a little piece of my childhood. I'm going to give him that. See, what it's going to be is, it's apolitical. Even though I'm a very political, a hyper-political guy, this little movie that's going to be made is going to be apolitical, about a first-generation American, an immigrant son. And even immigrants will flock to see the final production. It's going to be about the struggle to be an American in an immigrant family household in New York City in the 1950s. And the struggle to succeed as an American without falling prey to hating the country because of the great odds against the boy. He continues to have hope that somehow he will overcome all obstacles and be somebody to prove he is just as good as everyone else, even though he is attacked in the Bronx by racist thugs. He learns to see the good in people who do not talk or behave like his own people. He admires the cowboys, the pilots, the baseball players, the boxers. He looks up to men of action and vows to prove to himself and the world he is worthy. That's it. Now, you want to call about that? I don't know what you can say. It's just going to be a little thing. It'll be up on YouTube one of these days. But that's what I'm planning right now in my head. It's a rainy weekend. That's what I'm going to be doing. So now we can go to the calls. It's going to be all about Trump and Kellyanne Conway and this and that. I don't know if I even want to go back there, to be honest with you. Do you want me to go back there, or you want me to stay where I'm going? You got to tell me right now, because this show can turn on a dime right now. Where do you want me to go? You want me to go all the way back where we were, to the Trump, to the Conway, the Schmanway, the Hanway? Or do you want me to do politics, or do you want me to do stories? Or have you already hung up and there's no listeners anymore? I got to know. I'm sorry. If you don't call 855-407-282 in the next 60 seconds with a new statement, I don't know what I'm liable to do. So while we are waiting, I'll take a caller from the last hour. Kelly on KHI in California, line one, what's on your mind?
Hi, doctor. I just heard a comment that you made, and if I understood correctly, you mentioned that people need to have God in their lives, and that keeps them going. And I will tell you that as a former believer in the supernatural, I no longer believe, and I can honestly tell you without a doubt, I feel that my life is more enriched and more beautiful And so I disagree with what you said.
Well, different strokes for different folks, whatever works. So what do you believe in?
I believe in humanity. I believe in people. I believe in science and reason, education. And
where do you think reason comes from?
I think that reason, I can't even really answer it, other than to say that I think more than likely we have evolved as a species. And again, I believed like no one's business. And overnight.
Okay, so you went from being a religious, super religious, almost religiously fanatic, to an atheist who's a humanist, correct?
Call me what you like. Yes, I just don't believe in any supernatural entities.
All right, so, okay, fine. I'm not sitting here as a converter. I'm not trying to get you to believe in anything. I don't care one way or the other.
Yeah, I just don't...
I'm not trying to sell you on God. I mean, God doesn't need me. I'm just a man. He doesn't need me. But I'm asking you what you believe in. Do you have children?
I do not. I'm helping somebody in my family raise two children. And believe me...
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you have to have children to know life either, although it helps.
Yes. I understand. And, you know, again, I just want to point out there could be people out there that are listening in your audience who are like me. And I can tell you I appreciate life much, much more.
But why is it that you left religion? What happened?
I actually don't have a cataclysmic event that happened. I just read a book. And chapter one, it was done for me. Chapter one. And I thought...
All right, well, I'm glad you're happy. I hope you remain happy, and I'm not here to tell you how to be unhappy.
No, I appreciate it.
It's that simple. I'm not going to get an extra brownie point in heaven if I can, you know, tell you to go back to God. He doesn't need me or you. All right, Kelly, I love it. I love it. Hey, I like the counterpoint. I'm sending you a copy of Trump's War. How's that? Would you accept that gift from me?
You know what? Sure. That's just fine. That's fine.
Finish your thought. You were going to say something that I think is important.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily remember what that particular thought was, but I do want people to...
Okay. You're not high right now, are you?
No. Life is beautiful, and it's...
By the way, Kelly, do you use drugs of any kind? Are you on medication?
Never.
What do you do for a physical outlet? Do you run? You go to a gym?
No, I just, you know, I'm help. I try to help people. That to me is the main thing in life. Is that, you know, if you can do good.
So you have a very giving nature in either case. Well, that's quite beautiful, and I'm sure that transcends religious people who have mean spirits who give nothing to anybody. So thank you very much. Stay on the line. Scott, KSMO Radio, Line 8, you're the next up in this third hour on the Savage Nation in my hometown of San Francisco. What's on your mind, Scott?
Yeah, I really like when you talk about your childhood. And originally, I got hooked on your show because you had just come back on KSFO and you were reading excerpts for several nights in a row from your book, Train Tracks. It was newly put out. And
I really missed being on KSFO. I had floated around in the Bay Area. I started on this station, then I went to another station, then another, then I was off the air, now I'm on the air. And it's definitely my home. It's where I began. And I know many people like the whole smorgasbord of stuff, from politics to... I think more people like the personal than they do the political in the Bay Area.
Well, you really got me hooked on the excerpts from Train Tracks. I really like those stories.
Okay, that's interesting, because I just read you something that was never published called Lonesome Boy on Cold Sand. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I love it, man. I'm telling you, if you were to go that direction, I'd be happy. I'd sit in the parking lot when I get back to my shop and just sit there and listen to it. So,
were you ever a lonesome boy on cold sand yourself?
Yeah, in a sense, you know, my father was doing construction and was always busy. My mom was always there for me, but yeah, you know, I never really had that.
There you go. See, in many ways, that's a very, very interesting comment that you made. The radio show is sort of like a fatherly voice in some ways to many people, and I fill the role of the father for many people who either miss the father or never had a father or wish they had a father or an uncle like me, and I know that. I become, in other words, the very man that I missed in my own life. If you want to do it on a, if you want to really do a flip on a psychological level, I can go into the, put the psychiatrist hat on as well. Scott, I'm sending you Trump's war. See, now we're having fun. Now we're going down the road of a little fun. It's 18 minutes after the hour. That means on the East Coast, it is sundown, which means that Donald Trump's son-in-law has turned off his phone, and he is now praying. He has entered the Jewish Sabbath. And we know what happened last Friday night during the Sabbath. An adventurer within the administration bulled out the executive order along with the president on immigration. And although we may agree with it in principle, I think it was too much too soon, too quick, and not thought out carefully enough. I can make another analogy with a way to get things done, which is you can force yourself upon people or you can seduce people to believe what you are doing is correct. There is a way to do it nicely and a way to do it roughly. There's a way to do it in a way that doesn't feel like a rape. Let me put it to you that way, if you'd like me to be really blunt. Okay? You want me to get a little more blunt? I can do that as well. Okay? We like the policies, but let's do it with a little, well, no, it's a family show. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. You know, I once read somewhere that the only battles that are worth fighting are the ones that either enrich you personally or make the world a better place. So if you say to me, okay, why are you fighting with Trump's inner circle? I'm not fighting with them. I'm trying to make the world a better place, as I did by backing Trump from the beginning. I'm not going to be enriched personally by this battle. In fact, it is going to cost me a lot. Because even if they ever have a media day, like, you remember Bush once had a day where they invited all the talk show hosts, and I wasn't invited. All of the others were invited. I wasn't invited because I was too hot to handle. That's the same thing that's going to happen again. So I won't be invited to the this and that. All right, so I'll be the outsider again, which I've always been. I'm used to it by now. I've been out so long it's starting to look like into me. I'll change it from I've been down so long it's starting to look like up to me. Okay, just made it up for you. I've been out so long it's starting to look like into me. I'm a party of one. Go ahead, please. I don't understand this. Where's the call screener? What, do you go out for lunch? Hello, anyone home? Next case. Okay, next one. Tim, WFJX in Virginia, line 8. Go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. How you doing? I just wanted to call and say, you know, my last name is Trump. So it's kind of weird here. A lot of us with the last name are going through some things right now as far as you can't call and order a pizza because and give them your name because you're concerned about getting somebody spitting on it or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I had that from a little pizza shop here that's now out of business.
So,
a nice immigrant brought me with a glob on it.
Well, that's the kind of thing you got to deal with. But anyway, really, I wanted to call and tell you that I was listening to your little story about the walk on the beach in the sand. And I can kind of identify with that because my father, like a previous caller, was a construction worker, but he was out of town a lot.
So you grew up without a father. Even though you had a father, he was not there for you because he had to work. And you understood he had to work, but still in all, you missed having him around.
Absolutely. And I felt a little resentful, and I didn't know why. But now, you know, at my age, I'm almost at your age. I'm,
You're 49? You reached 49?
Well, if you're 50, I'm older than you are then. No.
Do you have any children of your own, Tim?
Yes. My wife and I have 4 daughters, and we have 10 grandkids.
Wow. So you've been a father to all of them, though, right?
Yeah, father.
You see, you made sure you were there for them because you didn't want them to have the emptiness that you had. So, you know, everything comes around, and there's for a reason for everything. That's the beauty of soul. Anyway, thanks for calling. A copy of Trump's War goes out to you. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-400-7282. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage. So we'll talk about cheerful topics like suicide, horror stories, world's riskiest dogs, the bar fly and the bar fighter within. Where are the serious men? We're talking about a bunch of stuff, that's all. I got loads of calls. Don't think I'm groping. We're sold out already. If you don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm not gonna go on and on with it, but it was, you know, it's been on the Drudge Report for quite a while now. Drama. Michael Savage cautions Trump about inner circle too much too soon. How could you disagree with me? And how could you disagree that there's too much too soon and in the wrong order, by the way? They should just add "and in the wrong order." Why did he have to push the immigration thing last Friday? I know the answer to that one as well. Okay, I'll give you the insight on it. It came out in the Daily News, I think, today. I'm not sure. New York Daily News. There's a power struggle going on inside the inner circle. You have the son-in-law, the very, very accomplished Jared Kushner, a real estate mogul, and the daughter, Ivanka. What you must know is that Jared is an Orthodox Jewish man. He turns his phone off on Friday evening until Saturday evening. He practices the religious Sabbath. He does not use his phone. He doesn't drive, that whole thing. What happened was, the minute he turned his phone off last Friday and went into the mode of meditating, welcoming the Sabbath bride, is how the Jewish people do it. They go into another state of being. Another player inside the Trump administration, who we'll affectionately call the bar fighter, plunged and pushed the executive order, getting Trump into the hot water of doing too much too soon. And so there's a fight going on for a power struggle with the throne. It's a very ancient struggle. You could trace a struggle like this back to King David, if you would like. Every religion, every race, every country understands power struggles. And this power struggle is no different. I pretty much know who's going to win. There's no question in my mind that blood rules. So I see what's coming. You may not. So don't be so quick to judge me wrong. Here's another one for those of you who can't get enough immigrants, especially Muslims. Did you hear about what happened at the Louvre? The Louvre in France? Louvre terror attack. Egyptian man who arrived in France last month, January, shot 5 times after attacking soldier with a machete. This wonderful Muslim asylum case was on the way to the Mona Lisa to rip it to shreds. You schmuck, you moron, you idiots, you stupid idiots. Why don't you invite him into your own house, you schmucks, you in Berkeley? You idiots, you. But all right. Assailant arrived in France at end of January. Louvre evacuated after soldier fires at attacker. Man armed with machete shouted, "Allahu Akbar." Attacker was carrying 2 bags, 2 machetes. PM says attack was clearly terrorist in nature. So the French soldiers apparently know how to shoot straight. And they shot this piece of trash with Egyptian identity papers. And you want more of them in here. You want more of them in here. You want more of them in here. Bring more of them in. So they'll burn the museums to the ground, like their ancestors did in Egypt. Did you know about that? Study the history, would you please? You know what happened soon after the Muslim conquest of Egypt? Because Egypt was not always Muslim, you know. It was a different worship system until Islam conquered Egypt. Oh, yeah, soon thereafter, the Muslims advanced civilization. They burned the Alexandria Library to the ground. So don't think this is something new under the sun. They believe in the monodimensional supremacy of a single book. All the other books they like to burn. And so when you hear about immigrants and asylees and morons at Berkeley, and bro, we're all no borders, no nation, F deportation. The French shot an immigrant from Egypt who ran into the Louvre shouting Allahu Akbar, wanting to slash the Mona Lisa. But you want more of them in the country, all you schmuck liberals, till they cut your head off. Then who are you going to blame then? Who are you going to blame them? Then, Donald Trump? Idiots? Morons? Wake up. What sane nation on earth brings people in who live in the 15th century who hate your art and your very life? Moron! Oh, boy, what morons. And you let those morons dictate the policy of a nation? Visitors kept inside the Louvre after soldier fires an attacker. Well, maybe they can now investigate this, because maybe the attacker wasn't really trying to cut the Mona Lisa up with the machete. Maybe there was some kind of cultural misunderstanding here. Maybe in Egypt they go into museums with machetes for other reasons. I don't know. It's possibly some other ritual of worship of European art that I can't fathom because I'm too much of a trilogite. I drag my knuckles. I don't understand. So look, the fact is I understand nuance as well as the next guy. But these are important stories. These are very important stories. And there's all sorts of things going on that I'm very interested in that I would be talking about anyway if I wasn't on the radio. So, you know, I'm lucky and you're lucky. Trump issues new sanctions over Iran missile test. On the face of it, it makes sense to constrain Iran. Iran is a rogue nation. Religious fanatics who will destroy the world if they're not stopped are dangerous. Now, why would he have to make this so public again? Tell me why he has to make it so public. Why does he have to be so pugilistic about everything he does? Why can't, now that he won, be quiet, step back, stop with the tweeting, conduct himself firmly in the background, behind closed doors? Why must he show everyone how tough he is? That's starting to bother me. I don't like the macho approach in a president. I don't care whether they're left or right. I don't like it. It may have worked on the campaign trail. It doesn't work in the real world because there are other macho men out there. And if they pick up your challenge and you back off, tell me how that's going to look. Let's see. Drew a line in the sand with China over the South China Sea. Drew a line in the sand with Mexico over the wall and paying for it. Drew a line in the sand with Iran. I'm not the only one who sees this, by the way. Pat Buchanan, who's a brilliant man, said the same thing. How many lines can he draw in the sand until someone challenges him and crosses that line? And then what he's going to do? What's he going to do? Be out of another Obama? I am sorry. This is called constructive criticism. This is something he's not going to hear either from the barfly or from the bar fighter. But he's hearing it from the man who helped get him elected. Donald Trump, we love you. But you better start listening to your friends, not those in it for themselves. There are ways to get things done as a president that are different from the ways you say things when you're running for office or when you were on the radio. I like everything Trump did. Everything he did, I like. Everything, thank God. The style is starting to get to me a little because I think it's too gruff for the world that we're living in. You say, well, we need gruff. I don't think we need gruff. A strong man doesn't have to act strong. A really tough man does not have to show you how tough he is to get things done. You just get it done in a quiet way. You apply pressure behind the scenes, but you don't humiliate people in public. You don't humiliate nations in public unless you want them to fight with you. Now, if you want them to fight with you, that's a good thing to do. Then maybe you can go to war with China. Maybe you can go to war with Mexico. You can have Viva Zapata again on the border. Maybe you want war with Iran, unleashing a wave of missile attacks. What are you going to do, sit here and cheer? Hey, go Donald! Go! Love it! Love it! Love it! I like his policies. I don't like the style. It's too pugilistic. And I think it's because he's being led by people who don't understand nuance or policy at all. You say, well, how do I know these things? Because I'm on the radio doesn't mean that's the only thing I am. I also live in another world or several other worlds. I get things done in worlds that I never talk about. And it has to be done quietly and with the negotiations, which require a lot of skill and a lot of patience. You can't just bully people into what you want. As much as we would like to get things done our way when we want them, that is not the way business works. It's not the way the world works. It may have worked when you're building a hotel or you're building a gambling casino. It doesn't work when you're dealing with China or Mexico or Iran, for that matter. That is what I'm trying to say to you. No one is saying that to him because everyone's afraid to say a word to Donald Trump for fear that he will be unhappy with them. That's a dangerous thing. Now, I know many of you don't like hearing this. You want me to sit here like a cheerleader, licking his boots, day and night saying, go, Donald, you're great, because you're still thinking like a child. Either you're with him or you're against him. That is wrong. That is 100% wrong. He's being steered too quickly in the wrong directions. That's why I wrote the article. WorldNet Daily wrote it. It was on WorldNet Daily. Then the Drudge Report posted it. And people are talking about it. Do you think I'm making friends with it? Do you think I wrote it to make friends? Do you think I'm stupid? You think this is going to ingratiate me with anyone in the Trump inner camp? Do you think I think that as a result of this, they're going to invite me to the Russian state dinner? I don't think so. Why am I doing it then? Why? I'm talking with you the same way I spoke with you for the whole year that I supported Donald Trump. As plainly as I can. As directly as I can. And I think that our president, who we put in office, needs to go a little more slowly and a little more quietly. It's that simple. And I believe that the people near him need to be put into the background. And some, let us say, more deliberate people put in the foreground. That's it. I've said enough on it. You're living through a social revolution. Now, some of you know it, and some of you don't. Some of you think it's going to stop and be gone tomorrow. It won't. That's wishful thinking. The left is highly organized, highly funded, highly activated, and they're going to be out in the streets for the next number of months, days, and years. And the fact of the matter is, it's your job to understand you are involved in this war. It's not good enough. It's not good enough that you voted for Trump. The day is going to come that you're going to have to speak out. And that means you. You can't just sit there and make believe it doesn't matter. They're pretty loud, aren't they, these people on the left? They're not shy to scream in your face. They're not shy to call you Nazi Hitler, are they? You got to learn what to say to them. And you got to learn how to grab them by the verbal throat and say, you listen to me and you just shut up for a minute. Just shut up. And you got to tell them what really is happening here. What is going on in this country right now is a result of what Obama did to us for 8 straight years. He ripped this country apart. He opened up our borders like with a can opener. The country is bleeding. Do I have to tell you it's been bleeding jobs? Do I have to tell you it's bleeding the other way with immigrants, many of whom don't come here to work? No, they don't all come here to work. Where'd you get that garbage from? Why don't you look at the actual data instead of being a movie star who calls Trump Hitler? And the actual data will tell you that the native population, that is you, does not use the welfare system anywhere near the extent that the immigrants do. That's number one. Many of the libs will quote the Statue of Liberty, as Charles Schumann did with Crocodile Tears. And you'll hear the same old story about the engraving on the Statue of Liberty. Give us your tired, your poor, and your huddled masses yearning to be free. Emma Lazarus, 1903. That's very touching. However, if you analyze it, there's a few elements of it that Mr. Schumer apparently missed. Number one, there was no welfare state in 1903. And so what were they brought here for? Do you have any idea why they were brought over in such vast numbers? My grandfather included in that wave of immigrants. It sounded like they just wanted immigrants to come here and be free. That's not what it was for. America was a rapidly developing nation. They needed workers. Most of these people came over as slaves. Oh, I don't mean with chains on them, don't get me wrong. But slaves they were nevertheless, living 16 to a room in hovels around America. New York City, the Lower East Side, now a fashionable district, was a hovel of immigration. 15, 16 immigrants to a room, sleeping in the same bed at different times of the day and night. Why? Why? Because they were needed in the needle factories in New York City particularly. They needed to run the garment center. They brought them over by the millions. Where else did the immigrants go? Those from Lithuania and Poland. Where were they going? The hard men from Eastern Europe. They were going out to Pennsylvania to work in the coal mines, in the steel mills. They were the ones who worked underneath the shower of sparks as the Bessemer converter belched its hot ashes onto the workers without OSHA. And they were glad to have a job at that. They never complained. They were men of steel, and they helped build America. And that's what immigration was for. It was not for a bleeding welfare state. It was for workers who were necessary to feed the engine of our industrialization. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Swiss.
So Trump puts in the travel ban, which is the smartest thing he's done yet. I just say he did it too forcefully and too quickly. But if you study the history of Islam and its conquest, you will find one of the most amazing stories of conquest in the entire history of the human race. And I've given this to you before, and I will tell you this story again. They came out of nowhere, southern Arabia, area of Yemen. They smashed the Byzantine army at the Battle of Yarmouk in 634. And then one nation after the other, they conquered Syria, Damascus, Palmyra, Antioch, Jerusalem, and the rest. They were all falling almost without resistance to the bloodthirsty Muslim who attacked with swords and burning cities to the ground. Many people then converted to Islam. Then the Muslims turned east. They turned to Persia, which was not Islamic at the time. Persians had a great general named Rustam. Persians had a great army with a force of elephants. And for 3 days they fought the Arabs at Qadisiyah. And finally the army of Persia broke in 637 and the nation was converted to Islam. The conquest of all of Persia followed. The Muslim Empire pushed far into the western Turkestan area, eastward until it met the Chinese, where it was stopped. Egypt fell almost without resistance to the new Muslim conquerors, who were filled with a fanatical belief in the sufficiency of the Quran. And then they wiped out the vestiges of the book copying industry of the Alexandria Library. And then conquest continued along the north coast of Africa to the Straits of Gibraltar, into Spain. Spain invaded in 710. The Pyrenees Mountains were reached in 720. In 732, the Arab Muslims advanced almost to the center of France, but then it was stopped for good at the Battle of Poitiers, and they were pushed back into the Pyrenees. I can go on and on. If you do not know history, you liberal idiots, you are condemned to repeat it, but you're not going to have me repeat it with you. Get out of the way, schmucks. You're not taking me over the cliff with you. God bless Donald Trump.